I fell into a ring of fire. I fell in.
Let's see it.
When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight. Fever.
Oh, I wish I was in Wellington. The wind is coming.
Hello and welcome to Fever FM. Tonight I am joined by Helena, Dave and Dale. Good evening, my peeps. How are we all?
That's very hip of you, Frosty.
Yeah, that's me.
He's trying to bring in a younger audience.
Oh, I thought that's what we got Helena in for.
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry, am I crimping your style, Helena?
You're taking my demographic.
Yeah.
You're the awkward uncle.
Oh, God, I could do that so well.
Let's not.
I have been building my life up to being able to shame my son publicly, and that it's positively weaponized. But let's talk about the game instead of my relationship with my eight-year-old. This is the top three clash, the Knicks versus Victory at the Ring of Fire, whatever we're calling it now. A bit of a change lineup with Alex Paulson in goal, Payne, Sermon, Wooten and Sutton across the back line. The return of Alex Rufa, Salas, Altay, Kraev, Old starting and Barbarousis. This is just, to me, seemed a very attacking lineup. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess with Barbarousis, Old and Kraev, that's probably our most mobile attacking front three. So I could see how you kind of see that. I guess we still had relatively three more defensive-minded midfielders behind them.
I was more thinking Sutton and Payne as well.
Yeah, I suppose you could put that way. I mean, I think for the most part we went down Sutton's side, I think, again, didn't we? Him and Old seemed to bomb on together quite a nice package. And maybe that's some of the reason why we had those three defensive midfielders in there, and rather than Pennington, who gets a little bit more forward than those other three there, maybe that was some of the thinking as a bit of a trying to balance out where we're going to go down the flanks.
Helena, what did you think of that? You like wide runners? Well, you are one.
Yeah, well, sometimes. Well, I'm actually, I'm medically retired now. I'm broken and washed up, but yes.
Join the club.
Okay, yeah, but I'm 24. I thought that it was not so much a question of being attacking or not, but I thought possibly Dale contemplated quite a fluid lineup. Like it's all those players will move around in their roles, take a more kind of free role of approach. So having that solidity in the defensive deep lying midfield, I thought was good. I mean, I just am so impressed by the way Ben Old plays every time he plays. But he does have a fairly free-ranging pop-up in different pockets approach. So I think I'd probably put it more on that point than being attacking or defensive, more just very fluid. Especially Kraev's the same. They both just kind of interchange a lot, which I like in a football team.
What were your thoughts, Dave, apart from not being able to see much through the persisting rain?
Yeah, no, I agree with Helena. I think while it's relatively attacking, I think it is that kind of fluid, dynamic, kind of creative lineup more than anything. You know, you've got a lot of guys on the field there who do like to roam around. Your wing backs are both ones who do like to get up and get back. You know, it's not like you've got someone out there who does a bit more defending. You really had the players up the wings who like to move about, like to cut inside, like to knock crosses in, like to exchange positions with each other, like to overlap. And I think that's kind of what we saw to some extent, was a lot of kind of freedom. It didn't necessarily, because of the weather, probably translate to that, like, you know, completely fluid, creative, dynamic X-factor game, but it was very kind of fluid.
You mentioned that left pocket, Dale, I mean, that was a massive inroad for us for the majority of that first half with Suts bombing on a lot. Do you think that was just the way it played out, or was that a kind of a deliberate thing, even though we had Payne there, who's normally been our attacking outlet out wide?
Yeah, probably hard to say whether it was deliberate or just how the way it played, I guess. it gets, you know, Sutton and Payne are slightly different players, really. Like, Sutton's a bit more of a, he kind of cuts in quite a bit as well, runs into, sort of plays a little bit inverted, and can keep the ball in quite tight areas and can kind of dribble out of danger. Whereas Payne's a bit more kind of, he sort of gets up and back, but he's like maybe the more, gets the ball, his starting position when he gets the ball is much higher, I think, than Sutton. I think Sutton's the sort of the dribbler of the two, and Payne's the more, let's force all the players into one area and we'll get Payne out wide by himself kind of aspect. So maybe that's just a bit about how the conditions play, and not wanting to play too many cross field balls in the conditions and balls, skimming on in the rain and that kind of stuff. So maybe it's just an element of how the game played more than any kind of, formal plan, I think.
Dave, despite that, Sutton making a lot of advances, we saw this is a pretty cagey affair right through the whole game, to be quite honest, but certainly in that first half, despite Sutton getting forward and making inroads. Do you think that was two teams who were being quite cautious about not giving the other team an outlet, or was it just, there's a bit of rain, there's a bit of...
I mean, I think it's probably a bit of both, to be honest. I think given it's a, top three clash, if you build it earlier, no one wants to drop points with no good reason here. You don't want to just gift away an early goal. So it was always going to be a bit cagey. But in those weather conditions with that much rain underfoot, it was always going to lend itself to being a bit of a dire game, and almost could have been one of those ones where you didn't see a lot of football played. So I think it's actually probably a testament to the quality of both teams that realistically this was a pretty entertaining game with, I don't know if free-flowing football's the right word, but certainly a game of football played that was entertaining to watch and technically good in parts as well.
That sort of middle third or middle half of the pitch, I think, was you could see the quality, I think, of the teams come out in that area. Quite a few, so just transitional moments, some pretty good, passing movements, I think. But again, the game also highlighted just how good a defence both sides have. And I think that's where it's kind of, everyone got to the 18 and then was like, ooh, we've got nothing to unpick either back line. You saw lots of blocks from us, and same for Victory. They obviously defended quite well as well. So it's one of those ones where I don't think the amount of good chances reflected that it was a bad game technically. It's just, had two very good sides defensively coming up against each other and both struggling to unpick each other.
Certainly felt like a bit of a brotherhood of the backline game for me. I think some of the best players on the field were actually those centre backs for both Victory and us, as it turns out. We did see a few opportunities, Helena, that didn't get taken. Dale mentions the blocks, but they were all shots from outside. But I think it was Falami got a decent shot off towards the end of the first half. Ben Old missed an absolute horror when he got his feet a little wrong. Was this just, how do we explain this when both teams have been relatively clinical on those inside the box areas?
I mean, I think that some things, Ben Old gets his feet wrong, it's a lot easier to do than you'd think. I don't know if the Falami shot you're talking about is like the one into the side netting or what, but I mean, I think in general, in these games, we've got two teams that defend very well. I think from my experience playing, what can happen is you're so used to chances being hard to come by, you get into this rhythm of there being nothing on, things being shut down, getting low probability chances that can almost make it harder to take the good probability chance. But also, it was pouring with rain. Very much not an easy game to produce moments of high quality, and that's not anything against either team, but they're good defensive units playing in terrible conditions. I think that's exactly the sort of game you're going to see chances get missed in.
Definitely Auckland rain.
All right. So that's a bit soon, actually. I mean, Jesus.
It's been over a year.
Well, they're still digging stills out of garages, man.
I think maybe in that first half, and a little bit in the second half, we're probably a little bit guilty of trying to overplay a bit. I think there was a couple of good chances where I think we won the ball in midfield and we broke. And I think Old was kind of played in with a very good angle to work with inside the box, and he could have, on his left foot, just smashed it towards low in the back post and see what happens, right? In a kind of conditions that no keeper wants, you're not going to hold it, probably going to tip it. We had players around, and he kind of cut a ball back inside to Cry where there was lots of defenders. And I think there was a couple of chances, I think, in the second half, a little bit similar, where just that last decision choice or pass or what just wasn't quite there, which probably, you know, reflected on some of the quality of the chances were a bit lower or a bit fewer because of that sort of elements.
Yeah, I think that's almost like a kind of failure of playing to the conditions a little bit. There was a little bit of overplaying maybe, like, well, we want to play nice stuff even though it's raining. But as you said, like, keepers aren't going to hold the ball in that condition. Like, every time they played that cutback ball, both teams, they'd look up and there'd be literally a line of five defenders queued up ready to block whatever shot. You know, there was a victory chance maybe at the beginning of the second half where you literally looked up and there was a line of Phoenix players angled towards the far post to block the shot. So it's kind of like, in that situation, in those conditions, just whack it, you know? It's not pretty, but it's going to create something. But there's a bit of overplaying.
I wonder if it might partly be a testament to Chiefy's coaching that he has really drilled into them what he wants out of them, and it's almost hard for them to forget that for a week just because it's raining, right? Like, you know, at training, he's been drilling into them, I don't want you to just pop shots for the sake of it. I need you to build up to the right chance. And it's so ingrained in them that it was hard to get it out. And it's hard to be critical when we have had relatively good weather, and when it's not like we're playing in the rain every week. You'd hope if we were that they would have kind of clicked onto it. But as a one-off, I don't think you're going to say, well, Chiefy, you should have spent a week training for the rain and telling them to forget what you've taught them all season.
Yeah, I was still a little disappointed that they didn't put a few more shots on, but also the shots that they did take, Izzo seemed to basically be standing still and just taking it in the breadbasket, which I was particularly disappointed about. I mean, you know, when it's that wet that the keeper's gloves are greasy as, and if he can't get a full hand on it, it's liable to go in. So I was a bit miffed about the lack of accuracy.
I think you could make the same criticism of Victory as well, right? They put a lot straight to Paulson's hands too.
True.
Yeah, I think in that first half, I think Salas and Alte both had chances at the edge of the box and was kind of quite soft shots straight at them, and more so perhaps Alte because he's been here the whole season. But he's been getting in these like pretty decent kind of edge of the box positions, but just doesn't have the shooting capability to really test a keeper. It's kind of, I'll just get this on target and that's good enough. Kind of, there's no aiming for corners and pulling it wide, which I can, is much more. Yeah, I can respect that much more than kind of just going down the guts and trying to get one on target.
He's struggling with the nosebleed he's getting from being up that high, Dale. He's just, it's not his thing. Let's be honest. It just isn't. I guess with Pennington not there, you mentioned before, not making those kind of late runs into the box, it's kind of, it's left Alte, and unfortunately, not so much. We did see Roofs trying to basically weave his way through about four of them early doors, which I thought was ambitious, but does speak to the man's confidence at the moment. We should probably address the elephant in the room. The difference between the last game and this game, not having Roofer and having Roofer, was it as marked because of him or just pure coincidence in your minds?
Yeah, I mean, he's been immense all season. I think you can't really underplay his influence. Whether or not the entire midfield performance can be put on whether or not Rufus playing week to week, I think might be a bit of an oversell. But I do think you know he has shown not only his kind of growth as an individual player, but his growth as a leader as well. I think he can recognize the situations where, you know, the team do need a bit of a rev up in terms of someone just taking it by the scruff and dribbling through a couple of players and sparking a bit of, you know, something through to even, you know, kind of off the ball stuff where he's, I think, getting better at handling referees and some of that stuff just generally, I think, has come into his game. Whether he's perfect at it, I don't know, but he certainly has shown this season, I would say, as a, you know, it's not a breakout. He had kind of already had that, but, you know, a real development in his character and him as a player.
Dale, you got anything to add?
Oh, I mean, it was certainly noticeable. We had far more control of the midfield with him particularly in that first half, I thought, you know, we were dominant is like a word that's well overused in football, but we were comfortably ahead in the control of that first half. You know, they had, I think at halftime, they had 8 shots and 7 of them, well, they're all outside the box and 7 of them were blocked. The other one hit the side netting, which was quite, ended up being quite wide. Yeah, I thought we created the better chances, had more control of that midfield. And I think perhaps in the second half, it evened up a little bit. But I think, you know, the difference between that game against Victory, who, you know, has some very good players, and last week, I thought it was, you know, quite noticeable.
Hmm. I do want to talk about the midfield, because it's been particularly interesting to me, as it's been in almost a constant state of flux compared to, say, the back line. We saw Kraev doing a lot more dipping back and picking up the ball. Is that, do you think that that's a Victory tactic, or is that just Kraev building into it the role that he's got in the squad, or not having Pennington to go forward a bit more?
Yeah, I mean, we have seen that from him, I think more so this year than perhaps last year, that he does like to pick it up quite deep and run at players. I thought he was probably our best player quite comfortably, I think, in that game. Every time he got the ball in the attacking half, he drove us forward, used his body so well to kind of, you know, push off, you know, defenders and stuff like that, and brought other players into the game. And so, yeah, I think that's this kind of his best game, is picking up deep with a little bit more space and running and trying to, you know, draw players out and get them to try and make bad decisions and bad choices.
His tiptoey style seems to suit the wet weather, I think, but certainly looked very at home in those conditions. Certainly didn't look like he was having any problems at all. Salas, however, he was not enjoying that weather. I was very surprised, because I would have assumed that Costa Rica being kind of subtropical, he would get the odd rainstorm like this, but he didn't seem to enjoy it particularly. He hasn't been kind of grabbing his chances as much as I hoped he would towards the end of the season. What are y'all's opinion on how he's going?
I thought defensively he, particularly in that first half, was quite good. I thought he won quite a bit of ball. I think his passing was left much to be desired. And I think a couple of his passes or heavy touches kind of led to them having a couple of transition moments that we kind of scrambled defensively. So I think that's something we have seen in general from him, as I don't think his passing is quite at the level all the time. I think, you know, he does have, he can, you know, play some good balls, but I think sometimes he just, whether it's concentration or whatever, it's not as clinical as in that, especially in that central midfield role where it needs to be. I think perhaps out wide, maybe he gets a bit more space and has played some decent balls and stuff. But I think defensively he's reasonably sound. I know he had a couple of moments when he went back to right back when the game got a bit more stretched, but I thought he was pretty good defensively when he was playing in central midfield.
Yeah, I agree. I might be slightly more positive though, because I think as well, we maybe forget a little that he hasn't been here all that long realistically, didn't have a preseason with the team, doesn't necessarily know the system Chiefy's playing as well as some of those other players. So I think I agree. I think defensively he offers a lot. We're not seeing kind of the best out of him, I think, in terms of his passing game or his attack. But I do wonder if there might be enough there that it is worth taking a bit more of a chance on him for something a bit longer. It'll be interesting to see Chiefy's thoughts on that, because I do think we've certainly seen glimpses that he can be a very good player. He seems to be pretty sound defensively, have a little bit of a creative spark. And if you could kind of smooth off those rough edges and have a full preseason and have him gelling with the system, maybe there is something really good hiding in there. Because I do think we see glimpses of a kind of X factor that would be really nice to have in the team, but it just isn't kind of fully formed yet.
Helena, I want to ask you about some of the rest of the midfield. We're seeing Alte kind of, he's knocked off a few of those edges. He's not by any means a breakout star, but he's proving to be relatively solid. But we're also seeing Salas, who's a little bit erratic, and Pennington came on and he kind of underlined again that he too can be pretty hit and miss. He's had a couple of really good games this season, but this one I didn't think was one of his best. What do you think that is the midfield lineup of choice, and kind of what roles do you think that that's best suited to them?
It's a hard question, because I was never a massive fan of Pennington, but then, like you say, this season he's had some performances that really impressed with me. He's, you know, I think at the very beginning of the season we talked in, on this pod about his passing range not being great. I think he's improved that a lot. So if he's good, then he's good, and he can kind of be quite a cog in that midfield. I think Eltay maybe flies under the radar a bit in terms of how much in Chiefy's system is actually kind of pivoting off him, and how fundamental he is to it. You know, that little step inside he makes into that half space between the fullback and the midfield block, he does a lot of work in there that enables the fullbacks to get forward, that enables Ben Old, for example, if Ben Old's out wide, it enables him to kind of go wherever he wants. Altay sits in such a space that Cryo can drop deep to receive if he wants to. I actually think that Altay is really quite fundamental to the system and to the way of playing. He probably needs, I think he plays best with Roofer in there as a disruptor as well. And I think the same with Pennington. Like, if you've got Pennington in there, it's definitely useful to have Roofer as like more of the enforcer kind of role. But I still think I'd probably always have Altay in there if I could, because actually I think those games where he hasn't been playing that well, or he's not been on the pitch or something, you do lose something. I think Tim Payne even like loses some freedom. So he's one of those players on the field that I think you just don't really notice just how much he's doing until it's gone.
You actually brought up a really good point. When you said that he dropped into that little left-hand pocket, I was kind of thinking back to Cruyff. When he was dropping back, it was always right through the middle. He was never having to drop wide as well and having to cover the width. I think you're right. I think that probably made Cruyff's life a lot easier as well. We still saw Tim Payne yelling at Altay a lot, but I think he probably
would yell at anyone and anything. So
I suspect if I sat too close to the field, he'd be yelling at me. We saw another substitution late on that was really a pretty impactful. Van Haddam didn't play many minutes, but the minutes he played to this game, what the hell, man? Turns out he's not a striker at all. He's a wide attacker. He's a winger. And he can hit a good dead ball as well.
I think we touched on this at some point in the season. I can't remember that. I think we thought that perhaps he's a bit better as a wide player. Like, you know, there was that time, the game he came on at right back, and he actually looked reasonably decent. I can't remember which game it was now. Might have been like Perth or Brisbane or one of those games that's relatively forgetful. I think he just struggles when he's got a bit more space. I think, you know, that's where he's most comfortable, and he does have a good, you know, some good delivery on him. I think when he's a bit more sensual, when he's trying to find space where there's not usually much space, and I just don't think he has that ability to find the right run or to throw some central defenders off to create the space to score. I think he's much, at this stage anyway, much more effective in that wide position. Now, when we won that free kick, I don't think I'd ever would have thought that he was the one who would step up and take it. But perhaps he should be on corner duty, because we do the old up and unders at the moment, and they're not working out quite so well.
Dave, we've kind of talked about those corner deliveries being not so great, as Dale mentioned. This one looked pretty spot on. I mean, it wasn't a corner, but it was right from that sideline.
It's pretty much perfect. It's exactly what you want the delivery to be, and the players are there expecting it to be there, and it all plays out as it would in the training park. So, yeah, I mean, as Dale says, clearly he's an option for taking some of those dead balls. I wouldn't have expected it. I would have expected that to be going to someone else. But yeah, big moment, and he stepped up and delivered an absolutely perfect ball. If he could deliver those consistently at corners, you'd be stoked. But the hard part, as Dale says, is how do you find him a starting spot on the pitch, and amongst the kind of quality we do have both up front and wide, and players who've shown a lot of consistency across the season. So I think it's great that he's had a bit of a breakout kind of 8-9 minutes. I think that's fantastic. We all can see that he does have some technical ability, but he's just struggled to show it in those games where he's played up front, and it's good to see him demonstrating that, yeah, maybe there is a role for him there, and it might be out wider.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen David Ball, who's getting fewer and fewer minutes at the moment, getting on. I think they said that he hadn't scored in 16 games or something similar. This is nothing for me. 16 games is pretty normal. In fact, 26 games is probably more normal for me. This kind of dry spell, do you think that this is something that's going to play on David Ball's mind? Or is it just kind of like, he's enough of a pro, he's fine?
Both, probably. I mean, I think ultimately, if you're not scoring, you do think about it. I don't think that's avoidable, but I think David Ball probably also knows that scoring goals is not really his main contribution to the team. I mean, firstly, a thing I'd say is, was it Oscar Van Hanen who basically nicked a goal that David Ball was queued up to tap in anyway? So it's one of those funny things of football that he could have broken that drought, you know? It's a second difference. But equally, I think he brings so much creativity that I don't know if it would really... I'm sure he's thinking about it. I'm sure he'd love a goal. I'm sure it's a bit annoying not having scored in a while when you're an attacking player and people tend to measure you by your statistics, like your goals going up. But it's not at all a complete picture of what David Ball contributes. And I kind of get quite frustrated when I see people being like, oh, he's useless, get rid of him because he's not scoring. I think that's a really impoverished view of what an attacking player brings to a football team.
I would have said naive, but yeah, we can go with that. Yeah, I think it's more, as I say, I think it's way more than 16. It hasn't been this season. Was it last season, I think? Perhaps it was. I think we scored against someone and then we lost. You know, how Vinny used to be described as like the assist of the assister or whatever it was. And I think that's the kind of role that David Ball's found in this squad. He's, you know, I think under Talay, he was much more in that kind of top. Yeah, he'd be one of the top two players up top, so he'd be in and around the box more. So you'd kind of expect him to be, you know, on the score sheet a bit more. But he's playing a bit more, not deep as in defensive midfield, but certainly not as high up and as much more involved in the build-up because... Because I think under Talay, we were much more patient, kind of patient build up. So it wasn't. Whereas I think under Chief, we try to turn as many moments and transitions, whether that's built through you know, speed of play, you know, him getting a bit older and not as pacey as our front three. He's not going to end up naturally in that box to pick up the tap in like other players are. So it's not surprising he perhaps hasn't scored as many as he has in previous seasons.
Yeah, I think those are all fair points. But it's always worth questioning quite what players are bringing in if we're going to be handing the plaudits out. Before we jump onto the Finn Sermons moment, there were a couple of moments at the other end that got my heart moving a bit faster. How are you all feeling about that? I mean, could you even see it down through the rain? Dale, you were there. Saw you with the shirt off, waving it later on.
Another thing I want to realise this season is I'm such a terrible watcher of football now. When you know that there's much more riding on the games, I don't enjoy watching tense games. Like I quite a lot of that second half I spent sitting down watching through my scarf because I just couldn't emotionally deal with the heartbreak that I thought was probably coming and expected to come being a Phoenix fan. The Fornaroli one, I think we kind of created that for them. I think we gave away the ball. I think Salas was, if I recall. But I think Sermon did quite well to get back and put a leg out to kind of push Fornaroli's shot into a not as dangerous position. So Paulson did quite well to tip that wide, but did it quite comfortably. And I think then there was that back post one, wasn't there, where... Eli Adams, yeah. Didn't really connect very well at all with a pretty dangerous ball back there, and
He did get foot to it without Sutton getting near it. He could have put that in, but I just don't know. It looked like he just thought Sutton was getting to it and just didn't quite commit to it. Was that giving you palpitations as well, H?
I was very close to turning the TV off. I think from what Dale's saying about how suddenly there's stakes and the emotional heartbreak is so much more severe. I think I really struggled with it. I mean, I kind of, I, in some ways, I was like, I still feel like we're going to somehow pull this off based on nothing, just pure vibes, copium maybe. But then I was also like, if they score, this is going to be horrific this time around. And I think it's only going to get worse this week, right? It's a lot.
Dave, is this just because we now have something to lose that we're all struggling at, or is it just we're all H accepted?
It's probably a bit of both, right? Like at this point of the season, even if we were kind of playing to make the six or whatever, I still think we'd be feeling it. It's just amplified by those extra few spots up the table. But I think as well, this was one of those games where it kind of did feel written for something to happen at the finish there, especially there's been more than a couple of games in the A-League lately that have had late grandstand finishes, and it just felt like a chance was going to fall to one of these two teams. And each time they kind of broke and whatever, you're thinking, ah, shit, this is it. This is their chance, and it's falling to them. But then, you know, it'd come back down the other end, and the Ben Old chance is the great example of it. You thought, shit, that was it. That was our chance, and it didn't go in. I think it's just that pointy end of the season, and then being higher up the table only amplifies it. I think I'd be riding every shot at the end there, even if we were sitting seventh. It just feels worse.
Yeah, well put, mate. That's probably fair. We should roll on to the goal now, because I think we've probably got some things to say about it. Beautiful ball by OVH. That the curl he got on that and the pace he got on the ball, perfect delivery. I mean, to use a basketball term, to have your big lads crashing the boards right up the center. It's in that field of chaos in there, especially in the wet, when you know Izzo's not going to be able to commit to it. I want to talk about Finn Sermon, because he's been one of the guys in our team that has put in an amazingly solid performance. And we probably don't remember back all the way back to the beginning of the season where he was the young kid who we were like, you know, he's going to yip up a couple of goals and blah, blah, blah. I've lost count of how many blocks he did in this game, let alone across the season. Is there realistically anyone that deserved a goal more than him for what he's contributed this season?
It's quite a hard question, right? Don't want to name a bunch, you know, seems a bit strange to everyone else, but I think it was a really cool moment. And like you said, he's been doing his job so well, but it's nice to see someone have that moment with the fever, with the three-person knee slide, like the narrative of it. That's what's great about football, right? In the pouring rain. And I think that's the sort of moment that sustains a young career as well. You know, when it's, you're kind of like, what am I doing? Well, those moments are pretty great. And it's a good header too. It's a great ball though. To use another basketball term, an absolute dime.
Dale, you were pretty excited because someone timed how quickly you got your shirt off and it was under 7 seconds. Do you even have any recollection apart from it went in?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I've disrobed that quick since the last time my wife gave me the eye.
Carry on, Dale. We're leaving that in, mate.
I'm trying to. No, I mean, this is the beauty of football. And I think, I mean, I don't know every sport in the world, but this is what kind of makes it different. And people would like say, you know, football, oh, it's so boring, no one scores goals. But this is why these kind of moments is important, because it's so hard to score when it does. These kind of moments are much more, you know, emotionally charged. You know, if like basketball, you know, you're scoring like what, 90 points a game. You know, you can have an excitement at the end, but I think for football, it's just what sets it apart from most other sports is you have these moments right at the end when it's so difficult to score, and you do, and it means something, and it happens to be at the right end of the stadium, and what gives. Because I was trying to think the other day, how does that compare to other time? Like, why was that game so charged about it? Because in the grand scheme of things, it didn't win us anything. Like, it won us 3 points, but it didn't win us a title, or it wasn't a playoff or something like that. So I was trying to work out what it was about that moment that was so, you know, euphoric compared to perhaps any other Phoenix game in recent memory. I can't really think of many others that I think I've celebrated with so much gusto.
Dave, you beautifully summarised the jeopardy that's involved in these late season games. Was this just the culmination in that jeopardy, just that release of pressure? And that, you know, in theory, this is only going to go up if we manage to score a goal, say, next week or the week, you know, come the finals. Or was this just a bit of deserved, like my theory, deserved reward for Finn, or is it everything?
I think there's a lot of factors that went into why this one felt so euphoric, as Dale says. And I think you had the combination of the result the week before. I think a lot of people had kind of built themselves up for that, and that felt quite crushing. It felt like it was, you know, that it might be the straw that broke the camel's back in terms of us being able to walk away with the premiership. So this felt like a little bit of the righting of the ship on that. But also you had horrible weather, relatively small crowd, but Friday night, few beers had been consumed. You know, it was a loud, noisy crowd, despite being kind of smaller than you'd expect. And then also it sets up for the grandstand finish at home for the last home game, right? Like you drop the points here and you know, it's done and dusted before that last game. This sets us up truly for that grandstand finish. Obviously we've got to go on the road. Obviously, you know, there's a lot more water to pass under the bridge, but without 3 points there, the next couple of weeks ride out quite differently. Whereas this puts you right back in the hunt. It put you top of the table again, admittedly only for a brief period, but it felt like us setting ourselves up to go out at least with a chance at this. So yeah, I think there was a lot that went into that. And then, you know, it's that late into added time. That's going to be exciting, even if that's the third round of the season. It doesn't matter for anything, right? It's that amplification again.
It seemed like it felt much difference for the team as well.
100%.
I don't think I've ever seen the subs run from the bench all the way around to celebrate the far corner. Like, you know, it happens when they're doing their warm-ups and maybe stuff like that, but for them to get out of their seats and, you know, make a beeline for the far corner, it felt like it was important for them at the time as well. So as Dave said, I think it's the keeping everything open and likely to lead down to the last game as well. I think it's probably that another aspect, yeah.
Yeah, very true. I mean, seeing their mate do that is probably, you know, the guy that they've been doing it, playing in the reserves and under 20s for the All Whites and that sort of thing, probably is just the icing on the cake. Dave, you keep mentioning the being in it for the season. Obviously, we're locked in a fierce duel now with the Mariners. Equal points, Mariners ahead based on wins and maybe even goal difference, maybe one or two. But now we're talking about the nitty-gritty end, and it's a very interesting setup. We have the Jets in our first game coming up this week, the travel over to Newcastle. Then we have our final game of the season at home, as Dale mentioned, against MacArthur, who haven't exactly filled us with full of fear either. Compared to the Jets, who have two easy league games, relatively speaking, no disrespect to the other teams, but they also have to travel all the way to Kazakhstan, play a game, come back, play one of those other round games, then play the Kazakhstani team again, all in the same time frame as we're playing two games. That is a very big ask for them, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, which always makes me, you know, keep my hopes open that it isn't done yet. Yeah, and if they win their last two games, then I think they probably, you know, fair play, they deserve to be able to claim the title based on managing that. But it feels like there's another twist somewhere coming. I don't know where, and I hope it's not
the Jets. You
know, well, no, I hope it's not like we get to the last game and Mariners are only drawing and then we cop a last minute draw or something like that as well to still retain points, something like that. But
H, you've probably travelled more for football than the rest of us. How tough is it for the Mariners to kind of that travel component?
I've never been
to Kazakhstan.
No, But I mean, what I would say is like, it's a real headache for how you manage minutes and manage who even travels. Because even if you take someone to Kyrgyzstan and they don't play a huge amount because you want to keep them fresh, they're going to have that the plane ride in their legs. And that's
multiple plane rides, right?
Yeah, exactly. And like, I'm going to be honest, when we go to Wellington for futsal, you feel a bit in the first game. Like, it's any travel, the rigmarole of it, the sleeping in a bed that's not your bed, being away from your family, eating food that's not the food you eat at home, like all of that stuff is something to deal with. So for them, like Dale says, if they ride that out, if they manage it and they still win both their games, I think you just could be like, yeah, fair play. That's a well-deserved league win. But equally, it's not easy for them to do it. Like, it's really not easy, because even the people you take on that plane, no matter what minutes they play, they're going to be tired.
Yeah, I remember a couple of weeks ago, Chief, after the All Whites came back from the UAE, Chief said, oh, I didn't want to start them all because I wasn't sure how the dynamic of starting six players who had just come off the flight from Dubai. Now, whether that's a legitimate concern or not, someone smarter than me can probably tell me otherwise. But then they've got that plus, well, the whole squad doing that, plus another 5-hour flight connecting from Dubai to Kyrgyzstan as well. So, yeah, we just really need LA to do us a favour on Saturday or Sunday. I can't remember which one it is.
Yeah, we thought that Western United were going to do us a favour against the Mariners, managing to hold them nil all until the 51st minute. Then they let us down again. But then that's the Snakes, were you?
Well, yeah, no backbone, do they, Snakes?
I appreciate the dad joke, though, Dale. It's a top effort. So those games that are scheduled, they are the Jets versus the Jets on Friday at 9:45 New Zealand time. If you are keen to follow the Mariners, their games, basically turn on the TV, they're pretty much playing all the time, I think is a safe way of putting it. If not, they're on the plane to go and play somewhere. More good news. This time, the return of Oscar Zavada. He is back training. No commitment from Chiefy as to him playing or not. So basically, wait till we get him through training. Oscar Zavada seems very confident. But still, good news to see a professional footballer getting back on the practice field. Maybe even, you know, that super sub in the finals that we need. H, you've got a dirty great smile on your face. Why is that?
I don't really know how you could just sort of bring him back in at this point. It's just quite interesting. But also, I feel like he's been like injured, back, injured again, out for the season, now he's back. I have been very confused by this whole thing, this whole season. So,
but this has happened a few times in his career. He has gotten multiple injuries for a season and just had whole seasons wrecked. So it's not unheard of for him.
Yeah, and I think as well, Chiefy was reasonably honest when this latest injury happened that his kind of regular season was probably done, but we might see him back for finals. So we're not talking a massive change if he's back training at this point. I think I will still be surprised if he takes the field in the next couple of weeks. But I think if he's fit enough to be back training, great, get him fit in case you realistically do need him in those final series, you know, just because the season was going to be done doesn't mean we're not going to cop another injury somewhere and maybe need to be relying on him. So I think it just seems prudent to me. But I think the fact that he was at training shouldn't necessarily mean Chiefy's going, great, he's back and he'll be riding the blind this week with 90 minutes the following. You know, I just don't think that's the position we're in. I think they're managing a player who they expect to return and expect they might need come a final series.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad weapon to have, a guy that can, you know, give you 15, 20 minutes off the bench who has that, I guess, the mana on the field to just draw the centre-backs away from everyone else as well. Even if he doesn't touch the ball, he's going to make a bloody nuisance of himself. He's quite good at that. We saw Gabriel Sloan Rodriguez. You may not have seen much of him. I don't think he's got on for any more than a couple of minutes. 17-year-old striker. He's signed a 3-year deal with the Knicks. That is good reward and, I guess, good business, Dave.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's fantastic reward for him, and I think it's great to see a young, widely touted talent signing with the club. But I also think you're exactly right. I think it's good business. Once he turns 18, he might have some overseas options available to him. He certainly has ties to a few other places, I think Hong Kong, and he's got a Brazilian footballing father, so there's probably some ties there as well. As well as, if he's as good as people say, you know, there'll be other countries and other leagues knocking on the door. So locking him in now is fantastic, and you've also got the Auckland club coming on the radar as well that might well have been sniffing around if you didn't lock him in. So I think from a business perspective, it's just a no-brainer. But I think everything I hear about him and the little bits we've seen, he seems like a really good talent. So good to get him sticking around for 3 more years, and we'll see how he goes.
Philip Rollo's article today said he definitely rebutted a offer from Auckland Black Knights Football Club. I mean, if you're a young player and you saw Corica trying to sign you, you knew you'd just not even be riding the pine. You'd be in the stands for the whole season anyway. So probably a smart move from him.
Yeah, I mean, they don't have a reserve team. So if he's not playing for the firsts, as you say, he's not playing football. That would be a horrible move for a young player, I think, regardless of who the coach is, Corica being, yeah, not a
fan. Are you saying you don't believe that Bournemouth are picking players straight out of that Auckland side? Surely they are. Come on, first season.
Oh, I'm positive they'll be loaning their subs across to play for them, no doubt, despite the fact that they don't do that for the for their French Ligue 1 side. That is owned by Black Knight Group or whatever it is. Dale has managed to field a few questions that we should probably rip into. Let's start with the first one, because I think this is a doozy, and I think I know everyone's answer too. Would you rather the Knicks win the minor premiership or make the grand final and take a chance? Dale, you've fielded the questions. You can go first on this one.
They were unsolicited, but so I don't really field anything. But I will definitely answer this one first. I would absolutely take the premiership, hands down, no questions, no delays. Take the title, indication that you're the best team across the whole season. Grand finals, knockouts, Biltmore open to slip-ups. So, yeah, I'll take the title and make sure we finally have a major trophy in our cabinet.
Dave, you're nodding gently. Total agreement or most?
Consider that a furious nod. Complete agreement. I would much rather the minor premiership. Every reasonable football competition around the world is decided on your league table, and that's how it should be. So, yeah, it's easy choice. I mean, obviously, end of the day, I'll take any silverware we can get our hands on, but I would rather win the premiership than the grand final series.
H, he's besmirching your beloved American football leagues with their playoff series.
I think that the NWSL should get rid of playoffs too, because it's not football. Football is an endurance exercise. The league is the better prize. However, if we were to not win the league, then you'd obviously want to win something. So you'd want to win the grand final. So it's a little bit nice to have that second go round, I suppose. But the league is the football prize, in my opinion.
Yeah, I am firmly in... You're all of yours camp. I don't even like the playoffs. I think I should just get rid of them. Yeah, you heard me. I don't think this is news to anyone. I'm a bit old school.
I look forward to you boycotting the home finals then. That's good. It's good to know.
Oh, you want my ticket, Dave?
I mean, I can find someone who'll come.
I can't go into the fever zone because my son is too short and he can't see. First world problems. The next question, this is probably a little more involved. Which of the Knicks players would make the team of the season? I'm assuming this is A-League team of the season. I'm going to start with you, H, because I've given you the last option the last few times. Just give me one name.
Ben Old.
Ben Old? that is an interesting call. Dave, do you have a name?
I mean, I was going to give you two names, Ben Old and Alex Paulson.
Oh, yeah, Alex Paulson as well. I was exactly what Dave said.
Yeah. I think you could debate a few others. I think I could argue a few if I had to, but they're the two names I would put forward first.
Dale?
Paulson should definitely be in the team this season. I don't think we will get anyone else. Maybe a bench player.
But who do you think should be?
I think probably Rufus should be there.
I am going to agree with you. He was my name as well.
I think you probably make a case maybe Tim Payne is right back possibly, but I think maybe Gary or someone like that might get in front. I think you make a case for lots of players, but I don't think many of them will actually get there. I feel like, you know, being Kiwis and us winning as maybe more of a collective kind of takes some of the shine off some of the individual performances that other teams, other players and other teams have had.
I was Paulson and Rufa. Rufa, I mean, I think you can't overlook when you're basically in the top two teams, when you're the linchpin of a team, regardless of, you know, whether you look pretty or, you know, have the greatest skills in the world. I think that that's not something to be overlooked and when you're throwing those accolades around. This next question is, because Oscar Zawada is back training, how could Oscar Zawada's return impact the Knicks? This is a bit nuanced, and the king of nuance, Dale, you've hedged your bets there with the who should be in, who will be in the teams. How does this affect the Knicks if he is back?
Well, I don't think he'd start any game. I think as a starter, I think he's purely at this point, he's impact off the bench. And he did that a couple of times. I think he scored that last minute against the Jets last time we were over there. So I guess just a different point of attack, I think, off the bench when the normal process is not working. I think that's pretty much, if I can still it to that.
H, you have a gentle smirk as though you have things to say.
That's my face, Frosty. Yeah. It's just how it looks.
Resting smirk.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he obviously has the potential to pull out big game moments, good finishes, but I wouldn't overstate the potential impact. I think the team's in a good space anyway.
What about you, Dave? Everyone seems to be agreeing at the moment.
I could try and be contrary for the sake of it, but I broadly agree. I think I don't see him coming back as a starter. I just don't see that happening. I think it's great to have him there as an option, but I'm not even convinced he's necessarily your first option. We've all said throughout the season, you know, he is quite a different player. And when you see him on the field, it does kind of mean we have to play a little differently. Now, there might be some scenarios coming up where that's not a bad thing, but Chiefy seems to like having a system and sticking to it. I think he's much more likely to go to his young players and go to that for his impact than he is to go to Zawada just for the sake of it, just because he's an experienced pro. But he is also a very savvy tactician, and so I think he might see some games there and he might see some matchups where he does think Zawada will be the impact player he needs, you know, that he sees a better matchup there against certain defenses. And I think that'll be the factor of whether or not we see him play, assuming he is fit enough to do so.
Yeah, for mine, he doesn't get on the field unless we're getting into the, you know, if we're down and we need a goal and we're going to change formation. As Dave says, Chiefy has not shown a real instinct to want to shift to, say, a 4-3-3, which, you know, to throw Zawada in the middle and just throw people forward. But that's not the worst thing to have as a coach, is options. Big question here. Where does Finn Sermon's goal rate in the Knicks' history of moments? Have we even had enough time to settle and make a good decision about that? Dave, shaking your head furiously?
No, that's the short answer. I think you can't answer this question until the next 5 weeks play out, or however many weeks it is. It's more than five, is it? But it is potentially a turning point in terms of us, say, winning a premiership, or it might just be a moment that never mattered for anything, you know? And so I think how big a moment it is, and kind of Knicks history really can't be spoken to yet. I think at the moment it's great. It's a fantastic goal. I think it will be a memorable goal. But how important it is in Knicks history is completely up in the air at this stage.
Dale, is the context as important, or is it just a big goal and a big game?
I think regardless of what happens, we will look back at that goal in 5 to 10 years' time as quite memorable. At the moment, it's for me, it's kind of like, I was kind of thinking of the other goals. I think Kenny Cunningham's goal against Central Coast Mariners in that 14-15 season, towards the end of the season, we were 2-0 down and he scored last minute for us to win 3-2. I think that was maybe the third game to go in the season. And I remember that being quite manic as well. But it ended up being nothing because I think we lost the last two games and bowed out straight in the finals the week after that. So there's a kind of, hopefully not a history repeating. It was also the faraway goal, so it probably doesn't, you know, the other end of the pitch, so it probably doesn't feel as much. But those are the two that kind of stand out at the moment. And yeah, I think it depends on how the season plays out. But I think we'll still remember it in years to come.
H, were these stick in the muds wrong about how important scoring goals is?
That's a bit of a leading question. I mean, every lawyer loves to say, look, it depends. So I am kind of inclined towards Dave's answer, but...
Boo.
But...
pick a side.
I actually think that it will still, whatever happens from now, it will go down as emblematic of the fact that this season this season's always going to be very different. It's always going to be remembered as very different because the expectations have just shifted so hugely. You know, you think about what being a Phoenix fan has been for so long, which is just taking quite minor victories and being subject to so much disappointment. The reason that that goal was so euphoric is because it was keeping alive our hopes of winning the minor premiership. That's a real kind of pinch yourself moment for a Phoenix fan, right? That we're even having these discussions, that we're thinking about whether Mariners going to Kyrgyzstan is going to affect their ability to beat us to first, you know, not to beat us to a top six place, but to beat us to first. And that goal to me is always going to be like emblematic of the fact that the hope that might kill us, whether or not it kills us, that hope is much more strong and much more exciting than it probably has ever been in the history of the club. So that's pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, I think the other, I mean, one of the other goals is obviously Paul Eiffel's in that Newcastle game in extra time, just given just where football was in that moment, like the coming up into a World Cup, massive crowd, injury time, excellent goal. So that's kind of one of the other ones that stand out. And if you include sort of penalties, then the penalty shootout. Was it Caceres who needed the winning penalty? Yeah. So there's a few floating around, but ultimately, you know, they're kind of an ultimate lost causes. so we'll see how this one plays out.
I am going to be slightly different, not for the sake of being contrary, but I think that this, for me, when we... H is talking about the what we've had to suffer through in the past and where we get to that final, even if we make it to the final hurdle, that's where we trip up. You know, that last game against the Mariners, we were kind of like, oh God, you know, this is where we just fall apart. And then to get a hard fought win at home in rubbish conditions, that for me says there's a lot more about this team than we have seen from the Knicks in a long, long, long time. Final question from our listeners. What's the moment from Friday outside of the header? The sub, bring on Oscar Van Haddam. Paulson's save versus Bruno Fornaroli. The limbs from Yellow Fever. Or the weather. Someone's going to have to explain to me the limbs.
It's on the tin, man.
I don't think that cleared anything up, Helena. That made me even more confused.
Yeah. I'll be quite honest. There's a lot of flesh that was going on in the fever zone, and it wasn't arms and legs.
Wasn't, well,
it's arms. It's arms. Yeah. Limbs are arms. Waving your arms around in celebration. It's called limbs.
Yeah, legs are limbs too.
Waving limbs around. It's what it says on the tent.
Okay. So what was your moment then?
I mean, you can talk about like the near misses because that's what kept it in the law, right? Like there's all those moments. But I do like the story of the subbing on of someone who Oscar had him. I feel like I've spoken on this podcast of I've been like, I don't really get it.
You're not the only one.
I've gotten much harder than that, H.
Oh, we all have.
I want to take a very contrary moment because I think the euphoric high of that finish is so gloriously contrasted by Ben Old's miss just moments before. And I think without that miss, which you could see the players, you could see everyone in the crowd. I mean, the cut to crowd shot is 100 people with heads in hands. And it felt like that was it. It was done. That was the chance and we'd blown it and it was over. And without that kind of dip, the high wouldn't have gone as high, you know? And I think for me, without that moment to counterpoint it just 2 minutes earlier or whatever it was, the finish isn't as fantastic as it is. And so I think for me, you had to have that kind of moment of crushing despair before the goal in order for it to feel the way it did.
What about you, Dale?
Yeah, it's always the limbs, isn't it? Like, it's just that the raw emotion. I don't know. One thing I haven't talked about is the interesting kind of the team coming over to celebrate after the game, which they've never, ever done. I think maybe they did it once. I feel like maybe first game.
Never like this.
No. Yeah. They've done one where they've kind of done the wee, but like, they've just never, ever done it for whatever reason, which is a shame because I feel like it's kind of like a missing part of sort of, I don't know, connection between fans and players or whatever. So that was quite cool too.
I think part of me likes that they don't do that all the time. I think if it just felt kind of forced and all the time, it would lose its meaning. So I'm not saying that they shouldn't do more in terms of connections between players and fans, but I kind of like that this felt genuine and organic. They were as excited as we were. You know, you could see guys like Paulson and Rufa absolutely revving up the crowd and using that to feed into, you know, the next couple of weeks. You know, that was a moment and they wanted to celebrate with the fans. And I think the genuineness of that I kind of like. Whereas if they were over there, you know, you do see a bit of that with some clubs around the world where they do go over and it just feels like a plastic moment. And I don't want our club to be that.
Yeah, it's a good point.
For me, it was another organic moment. When that final whistle blew, you just saw the entire team turn towards Finn Sermon and just run at him like a zombie horde, Paulson jumping in over the top, all of them grabbing him. Just that for me was brilliant.
Did you watch, anyone watch that All Access from last week on Italiano? Because there's a kind of a clip part of it where he's kind of talking to someone in the office about, oh, you know, there's science to suggest that teams that have this kind of rev up kind of element perform better, which kind of, you know, we have talked about it previously in the season about how, you know, when Paulson makes a save, how enthusiastic or, you know, everyone kind of jumps in and there's high fives and it's obviously a, well, you'd hope to think there's a science behind kind of that element that's sort of come through this season that hasn't really been there previously.
If you work within women's sport, if you work with sports psychologists, they'll say, because women don't tend to celebrate, and they will tell you that that's a performance barrier, that downplaying of achievement makes you perform less well. So those moments of euphoric celebration of Alex Rufa telling Finn Sermon, let's hit this triple knee slide right there, those moments are going to spur them on. Like, that is the science of it. And, I mean, it's also just, it's just cool, right? Like, these kids were written off as wooden spoons. Half of them are academy products. I just love those moments where it's kind of like sticking it to every Australian pundit that said they've got no chance.
Yeah, that does feel good, doesn't it? I've just looked at the clock and we have run hella over time and Dale's going to be editing this all night. But I think that's the great sign of a great chat. Just a reminder that the Knicks playing the Jets in Newcastle at 9:45 on Friday. If you're vaguely interested, the Mariners will be playing in Kyrgyzstan at midnight on the Thursday. Then they're back to play Adelaide at home on the Sunday, potentially a hell of a banana skin because Adelaide can ruin people or they can ruin themselves. Then on Wednesday again versus the Kyrgyzstani? I'm going with Kyrgyzstani team. That's on the Wednesday. And then on Saturday they have to back up and travel to the Jets for the derby. So yeah, hell of an interesting wee battle for first and second. With that, I'll wrap up. Thanks for listening. Hopefully we're back with 3 points and an epic duel going on between the Mariners and the Knicks, because let's be honest, if there are two teams that the big clubs don't like, it's us. Thanks all, and see you next week.